TED Audio Collective.
In the late spring of 2020, just a few months after the announcement of the COVID-19 virus, lockdowns and restrictions in cities around the world took hold. At the same time, we watched from the perches of our social media platforms as the aftermath of the murder of George Floyd unfolded before us. When the world erupted in mourning and rage, large tech companies proclaimed their support for Black communities and professionals and made diversity and inclusion commitments to the tune of over $3 billion. At the time, my team of data journalists and I at The Plug tracked and reported on those company pledges. We worked in tandem with Fast Company to understand how the spending worked out over time. We looked at companies like Google. They pledged over $175 million across various projects, including increased spending on programs that were skilling up Black software engineers and other tech talent. They also directed funds towards evaluating internal practices of equity across their employee network. That included offering PTO and mental health services for employees, particularly during moments of racial violence. It is now nearly 4 years since the murder of George Floyd. Today, these companies have to face some serious, heavy questions about their effectiveness, impact, and long-term solutions for systemic issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion. I'm Sherelle Dorsey, and this is TED Tech. Today, we're sharing a conversation I had at TED Women in Atlanta, where I sat with Melanie Parker, Google's head of diversity and inclusion, responsible for advancing Google's employee engagement strategy across diversity, equity, and inclusion. I wanted to understand how the tech giant sees what should be the key priorities in DE&I, and we discussed best practices for those leading similar efforts in the tech industry. Listen in to our conversation.
Hackers and cybercriminals have always held this kind of special fascination.
Obviously, I can't tell you too much about what I do.
It's a game. Who's the best hacker? And I was like, well, this is child's play.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston. And on the Click Here podcast, you'll meet them and the people trying to stop them.
We're not afraid of the attack. We're afraid of the creativity and the intelligence of the human being behind it.
Click Here, stories about the people making and breaking our digital world.
AI machine.
Satellite.
Engine ignition.
Click Here.
And liftoff.
Click Here, every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Melanie, I'm so honored to be sitting and sharing the stage with you.
I couldn't wait for today to have our conversation.
Yes.
Joined with all these lovely women.
There's so much to cover. To be at this experience, to be celebrating the power, the voice, the ideas of women, there's also some really grappling and gripping conversations that we have to have, particularly around diversity, this idea of equity, as well as inclusion. And your work, even beyond your title, has been extremely massive. But we also have to look at what the last few years has entailed and what commitments have been made from corporate entities. And so I want to dive in today with you this morning about where we sort of were and where we're going. But maybe let's start with this commitment, particularly that Google made right out of the gate, particularly when we think about 2020, the murder of George Floyd, and the sort of subsequent reckonings that our country, that the world has had, and what that's meant for your team, for your organization at large, and how we're starting to think a little bit differently about the shifts that are now happening.
So it's a great question. And even before we get to like the horrific murder of George Floyd, you know, I think we need to step back a little bit further and think about COVID and the comorbidities that were exacerbated. You know, we thought about who was killed by COVID. And I think that brought a spotlight that exacerbated when we started to look at police brutality. And, you know, before George Floyd, there was Breonna Taylor, yeah. Ahmaud Arbery. And this wasn't like an episodic event. It really led to a global racial equity movement. And I think global here is important. So my I have four generations in my household. My mom's 85, the wow. youngest in my household. I'm a new Gigi to a granddaughter, Noelle. And my mom said, who marched in the 1960s with Dr. Martin Luther King, both of my parents did, she said, I can't believe that people outside of the United States care about police brutality towards Black Americans. I mean, she was stunned by this. And so I think that backdrop is important. So what we did at Google, like quickly recognizing, hey, this isn't an series of episodic events. Yeah. This is a movement. And we need to immediately deepen the work yeah. that we're doing. So we went on a 100-day sprint as a company, like not just my team, which is a very representative team. I have a rock star team that enables everything that I do, but this was a company. So we did a call to action across globally across Google. And our goal was to really ensure that we were building sustainable equity internally and externally. And so we had teams that looked at all of our products and how do we use our products for social good, which is embedded in the mission of Google to ensure that our products are helpful and accessible. And then internally looking at, we used our Black leadership, our Black executives and our Black Googler network, which is our ERG employee resource group, mm-hmm. to look at what do we need to do internally to build equity, and not just across the Black community, but across underrepresented minority. So we look at Black, Latinx, Hispanic population, as well as Indigenous community. Out of that, we had 8 commitments, 4 external, 4 internal. We've invested over $500 million in the racial equity commitments, and they complete in 2025. So we've learned a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Along the way. And we do this work as a collective with civil rights organizations, human rights organizations, you know, other organizations, because you can't do this work in isolation. This work, we have to go together.
What's been really, first of all, that's really fascinating. And thank you for really spilling that out for us. What's really interesting is there is almost this new identity around what discrimination, what marginalization, and even racism, if we can just call it by the term that it is, has inflicted on various groups. And it is sometimes a challenge to think that it took a series of very catastrophic events, including a tremendous public health crisis, to get to a place where our ears were open. Right. And even when I think about the nature of the partnerships that you all have had, particularly when it comes to HBCUs, but there's some unique partnerships that are expanding beyond just social justice initiatives and even stepping into an area of education.
Yes.
And very unique partnerships, particularly around the future of work, which when we think about inequalities, when we talk about the racial wealth gap, when we talk about who gets to build the future, who gets to imagine a future, a lot of times when we think about the folks who are left out, that is women, that is other marginalized folks of color, who don't necessarily get access in the same way that some of our counterparts do. And there's a particular emphasis on unique partnerships in order to create, upskill, reskill, or even teach particular skill sets that are going to be found in the future. Can you speak to that a little bit more?
Yes. And so it's an incredible observation and an insight. You know, let's start with our historically Black colleges and universities, which are national treasures. And we have to surround our HBCUs and ensure that we continue the pipeline. And part of that, yes, is investing in the pipeline for development to make sure that we're hiring. But there's a bigger part to this picture. And so at Google, I lead an HBCU President's Council. And one of the things we're doing, in addition to creating opportunities for internships and hiring, is we are helping to amplify research opportunities. And so I'm not sure if you know this, Sherelle, but out of the HBCU landscape, there are no HBCUs currently that are at R1 research standing. And that means that we have a stewardship responsibility to ensure that we're providing research opportunities. But research opportunities also, they don't just provide development, they also provide diverse voices, diverse ideas, diverse thoughts into cutting edge research. We just launched an Applied Research Institute a couple of weeks ago in partnership with UNCF and TMCF, focused on HBCUs with mathematical and computational research to provide these hands-on opportunities. And with Spelman College, through Google.org, we provided a $5 million grant for a women of color STEAM database. This is, no one else is doing this. And so Google developers, other HBCUs are partnering hand in hand with Spelman to create this database. And this is the type of opportunity that we have to continue to provide. And just, you know, one other example, at Howard University, we have a partnership that we just announced. It's called Project Elevate Black Voices. So how many of you are familiar with automatic speech technology? And I don't know about you, sometimes I use it and it doesn't recognize my voice. Right. And so Google's research, as well as external research, you know, has determined and validated that it doesn't universally recognize all voices. So Howard University holds the licensing rights, but they are doing that research to improve the technology. These are the types of opportunities and unique partnerships that we have to not only build the pipeline, but to ensure that we have diversity in the design, in the products, and in the services.
That's super incredible, particularly for students who are currently at these institutions and are going to get access and opportunity. I think also to Google executives and employees as well,
exactly,
who provide mentorship and leadership as well amongst these particular programs. And you talked about the partnerships with the United Negro College Fund, the Thurgood Marshall Foundation, and oddly enough, in 2020, and I always want to go back to that date because there were some really interesting realities. People for the first time were learning about all of these organizations that were supporting and have been doing work for decades.
Yes.
So for a lot of folks, it was kind of a firsthand discovery. So when I think about this area of DE&I and sort of 2020 to 2021, we saw sort of the largest growth of chief diversity officers being named for the first time in corporate spaces. We saw this kind of deluge of focus on things like a 15% pledge across retail or representation on stages or even within authorship and books. And then we hit 2022 and we saw this sort of decline economically, of course, housing to inflation to all of these things that started to take precedence, which also meant the pullback of all of those big promises, those hyper-focuses. And the shift was very palpable for so many of us. And we kind of knew that it was going to come. We knew that the focus and the language and almost the hysteria around how do we elevate marginalized voices might take a turn. So we sort of had to think about, okay, if we're going to have this spotlight for like 12 to 18 months, like how do we like rush out and get it done? What's fascinating is you talk about these pillars, these eight pillars, and these goals that are going to be accomplished by 2025, which is absolutely fascinating. And so I want to get an understanding of why has this work stayed the course? And where are we going? Because I hear of these amazing initiatives and opportunities. I hear of the dedication. You're one of the few remaining chief diversity officers, unfortunately, that's really heading a major company. But I think that many of us might be concerned about, is this a fad? Are we going to have to change language now? We're only talking about ESG now. We're only talking about terms in a certain kind of way because now all of the language we learned in the last 2 years is somehow deemed offensive. So maybe you can paint a picture of hope in some cases.
I was just thinking that. So let me interject with some hope.
Yeah.
So what we're seeing today, I don't lose heart. I do have hope. I mean, my parents, I told you, marched in the 1960s with Dr. Martin Luther King. And so we've seen this in history before. One of the things that we've normalized that we're not going to go back from, we talk openly about race in the workplace. I mean, if you think about particularly Black and brown communities are either hyper-visible or invisible. In between that, it's a whole lot of stress. And so what we're talking about is how do we normalize Black and brown communities in the context? And that's what we've done following the murder of George Floyd. I think that's also why we've seen some of the pushback. But we're not going to go back to where we are. I have a lot of hope with Gen X, the way that, you know, they have forced a demand for how we interact, what they want, how they show up. And we're really leaning into that. And so I want to make sure that we don't operate out of fear and that we don't retract, that we stand strong. And Google is standing strong and unapologetic about the commitment we make. And we're able to do that. And I'm able to sit in my role because we have an incredible CEO with Sundar Pichai, who really gets it, understands it, and it's a company imperative. So we have racial equity goals, but we also have company-wide goals as well. And our CEO meets with our HBCU President's Council as well and spends and pours time there. And so these are the types of things that we have to hold on to, but they're also the things that we have to push for and to continue to demand fairness and respect and dignity, which go hand in hand with equity and diversity and inclusion. And there's a lot of talk now about belonging. And I think we should like hit this head on. Yeah. I believe that diversity, equity, and inclusion is insufficient without belonging, like insufficient without recognizing that everybody, to like the science of belonging says that people have to feel rewarded, seen, recognized, and valued in order to feel like they belong. And so I think we see this added on. And so these are the types of competencies and capabilities that are here to stay, even though we get pushback. But pushback means there's progress happening, and the research shows that there's progress happening.
Yeah. A little discomfort is good for all of us. I love how you talk about, or you brought in that concept of belonging.
Yes.
And also highlighted the different requirements of generations. Our generation started to ask for more.
Yes.
More balance,
yes.
More recognition, more sustainability, more consciousness around how we show up in the world and society as well as on the planet. And I think you referenced as well Gen Z asking for, like, Gen Z is bold, but that belonging component,
yes,
is almost it's a force multiple with Gen Z. It is, I'm going to show up and
it's
be all who I am.
It's a requirement. It's not an entitlement.
Yeah.
When I grew up, you know, my parents raised me to, I'm first generation, my brother and I, first generation college, I'm first generation corporate America, and we were taught to be better, faster, smarter, but to compete at average. That never sat right with me. But I was taught to fit in, not add in. Gen Z is saying, here's where I add in, and this is what we have to do as corporations and organizations. It's not about who fits into the culture. It's what's missing in the culture and who adds in the culture.
Yes. That's an amazing point.
Yes.
And I love that you talked about the belonging because it's less of the quota of diversity, right? It's more than just I'm a data point that potentially represents something.
Much broader than that.
It's so
much
broad.
Broader than
yeah.
that. I mean, and talking about culture, we've trained over 10,000 managers at Google on how to interview for additive skills not just fitting in, because that's a mindset shift and change management that we have to do on our side from a corporate America side to ensure that we're taking full advantage of this incredible talent that's in the world.
And so just as a closing, what is your advice to other leaders that are struggling to figure out how do we create this new culture? How do we still prioritize what diversity looks like, what belonging looks like, and continue to even just measure the progress as we go along?
My advice is to recognize what we're talking about are universal solutions that are common to humanity, but we have to recognize that there are communities within the universe that are situated differently and require different treatment to take full advantage. This is a basic right and a basic privilege. And if we could all as leaders stand and take stock of that and lift as we climb and ensure we're bringing everybody along, we will reach the culture that we aspire to.
That's incredible. Yes, thank you. Well, we see why you are such an amazing boss.
Thank you.
We get to witness it live. This is incredible. Melanie, thank you so much for joining us here on the stage today at TED Women.
Thanks, everyone.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Each episode features insight you won't find anywhere else from the center of the conversation surrounding emerging technologies like AI. Right now on the podcast, you can hear a special episode where Brad Smith lays out Microsoft's vision for a vibrant marketplace driving the new AI economy. To hear more, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
I deeply enjoyed having this conversation with Melanie on the TED Women stage. But I want us to also understand that 2020's focus on inclusion and diversity starkly differs from today's climate. Corporate programming and initiatives focused on uplifting specific groups of people are currently under attack by groups who don't believe DE&I initiatives or efforts work and could be another form of discrimination. Lawsuits by proponents argue that real systemic change isn't happening, or that DE&I discriminates against those who are not considered part of marginalized groups. The climate is fraught with uncertainty and seemingly an undoing of all of the work of 2020 and 2021's initiatives that seem to gain tangible traction. And while most corporate employers have not yet changed their DE&I efforts, it is worth considering, as Melanie referenced, that the next generation of workers is looking to be valued in the workplace. DE&I extends far beyond just issues of race, but helps us to ask deeper questions about what types of environments we are creating for groups of workers that enables them to feel valued, included, and able to do their best work. TED Tech is part of the TED Audio Collective. This episode was produced by Nina Lawrence, edited by Alejandro Salazar, and fact-checked by Julia Dickerson. Special thanks to Maria Latias, Faraday Grunge, Corey Hajim, Daniela Valareso, and Michelle Quint. I'm Sherelle Dorsey. Thanks for listening, and talk to you again next week.